Previously, on Unbalanced Encounters.
Patrick and Bastion have peeled away from the bodies on the ground and are moving toward the cowering shadow in the far reaches of this glen. On the ground, four wolverine cubs.
Guard pulls back in an attempt to just remove this guy's arm from the body and then swing the arm down with the axe still in it into the guy's head.
I made sure there was enough meat so that they could eat well. And then I buried them with the others.
Did you know that Guard did this?
Guard were able to take up arms and deal with them and follow orders. So my question is, for someone who's able to mischievously deal with Goliaths and their upset stomachs, I take their side and then I specifically ask them to complete a job they are unable to. You chose to not follow a direct order from your employer.
From my employer? Ultimately, do I report to being the Empire? Thank you. What I have been hired to do is to protect Rally and its citizens and you so you can do your job.
Only him and Leah and June had a monotone whisper. How much can that Elder Tree get us? Can we possibly subtract maybe a third of what we got? It's a plan that I might have had to get the Empressar's employees out the way.
So you're excluding Harissa and Guard?
A test of sorts I just gave Harissa and seems she's failed.
I trust Harissa. I trust Guard.
All right, go get him. As she runs off, you know about Agravar.
Fuck me, Isaac. Declaring war on the Empressar? One and all, and welcome to another episode of Unbalanced Encounters. As you may or may not have noticed, the title of these episodes has changed. We have finished our first arc, War is Disorganized Boar, and we're moving into a new interim phase of the show that we're calling the Rallying Interlude. We're doing this for a couple of reasons. The first of which is that truly half of the cast is moving, some of us internationally at the moment, and things are a little bit in chaos. So coordinating, you know, kind of a regular recording schedule has been a little tricky, and this has been a way for us to take a step back and, you know, kind of take advantage of the times that we have to play. The other reason is because we're sort of in this intermittent space where we've just discovered these massive things about our characters, Mr. Spinks and the Oath to the Forest, Guard being a guardian, June and her bond, Elder Gods as a concept, right? We wanted to take a little bit of time to explore how all of the characters are thinking and feeling in the wake of those things, and also give the players some time to play with some of their new toys. Level 3 is an absolute blast. And so this episode, episode 8, is actually the second half of a two-parter with episode 7. That's going to happen one more time between episodes 9 and 10 for a total of 4 episodes in the Rallying Interlude. Before we move on in episode 11 to our second arc, which we are calling They'll Need a Crane. Going forward, we're hoping to stick to the structure of one whole arc and then one or two sort of level up episodes in which they jump a couple of levels, they get to, you know, sort of feel out those new things about their characters, reflect on what's happened, and then we'll jump back into the next arc. So as always, thank you for bearing with us and being with us as we figure out how to organize this show and tell the best story we possibly can. All right, I'm going to shut up and let you get into the episode. Have fun. Bye. So we cut to the next evening, and I think everyone is honestly kind of keeping to themselves a little bit, right? I think there's an element of just nobody wants to fucking get into everything that's sort of circulating. I think everyone is a little gun shy about campfire stories at this point.
I forgot that happened.
And I think everyone is doing a relatively good job of keeping to themselves. We all sort of make camp for the evening. And I think, Harissa, you are taking this opportunity to make good on your promise to pierce June's ears. And we are just in this moment of quiet, right? You've gotten a little, kind of a gauge needle, you know, just thick enough for piercing ears from Whiskers, who, you know, has used it for his septum piercing from whence his prosthetic mustache hangs.
It has been cleaned, I assure you.
Yes.
Yes, but Whiskers is a purveyor of piercings, and... and you've managed to sort of get a hold of this and have kind of found a quiet little nook to sort of tuck yourself away in and are sitting and having a moment with you.
Now, my daddy said I had to wait till I was 13. I'm well over that age, and I think it's time. And she, this whole time with these earrings, she's been like... crazy obsessed with making sure that she has those earrings, like, and has not lost them.
Okay. All right. Don't worry.
I'm not scared. Have you ever pierced ears?
I did, in fact, once for my brother.
Is it
going
to hurt?
It will sting. Maybe a little, but I do it quick, and it'll be fine. All fine.
All right.
What I'm going to do... She kind of like takes June's earlobe and sort of like holds it sort of like in her fingers, just so she's got it kind of like taut. just leaning head to one side. And on the count of five, I'm going to pierce.
Okay? Five?
On the count of five.
Can you do it on three? Five sounds like a bit long time for me
to
think
about. Okay, three.
How you're going to be piercing my ear. Okay.
Okay, I'll do it for you. Oh. Three. I'm holding the... But don't worry, I've done this for my brother. It looked very good.
I'm not scared. I'm not scared. It's okay.
One. She's holding the pin. Two, and then to go straight into two. Just puts it straight through.
There you go.
Amazing.
There you go.
Amazing.
All right. Breathe.
Can I get a constitution saving throw with advantage from June, please?
Oh. Okay. 13.
Okay. Yeah, on a 13, you are woozy, shocked, little clammy, but conscious and holding on. Which ear, left or right?
I'm going to say the right ear.
Right ear is pierced.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That wasn't bad. It was bad. I'm fine. I'm good.
You're very good. I'm good. Very proud. You did better than my brother. He squealed like a little girl.
really?
She holds out her hand for the one of the earrings that June is holding. So she can pop it in for her.
Very gently place it in your hand.
She takes it and very ceremoniously sort of pulls the pin out and replaces it with the earring. Okay. Next ear, are you ready?
I'm ready. And shakes her hands out a little bit. And this isn't so bad. And, you know, maybe after this, I overheard... Mr. Spinks saying that something about a tattoo. Maybe you can give me a tattoo later on as well. I was thinking like I could get these sleeves, like big vines and like flowers and stuff all the way up my arms and on my chest and maybe like a face tattoo. All right. I'm ready.
Okay. we'll see how you do with these. Tattoos hurt a little more. Right. Depending.
That's what I was thinking.
But hey, if I find a good guy, we'll get it done. So, me and you together, we get the matching tattoos. I like it.
Yes.
Right. So remember, count of three.
I feel like it's more of a two, one and a half, but all right.
One. Two.
Two.
Three. And then after the three for a moment and then pushes it through.
That, wait, you got to three. Ah!
Go ahead and give me a constitution saving throw flat, please.
A 12.
12 was the DC to not pass out. Very good. You are fading slightly. You're woozy. But you flicker your eyelids and just very distinctly, I think you hear, you know, Harissa, June, and but it comes through in your head as your father's voice, and it's just June, and then it morphs back into Harissa's voice as you sort of come to, and rejoin the situation again, just cold sweat.
As June comes to, I want Sphinx to be in front of her, sort of like fanning her with a little bit of a cloth. Just like... You got it! You're good! She's awake! I see her eyes! It's fine!
I imagine that Mr. Sphinx is actually really hot most of the time. Like, just sort of radiates a little bit of warmth.
He's a hot boy.
Is that...
Throwing is hot that, air
so,
on
so
me.
So he's just fanning hot air into you.
Sphinx, you're not helping.
Perfect.
I'm helping. Look, she's awake, isn't she?
I'm sort of awake. This is fine. I'm fine.
Again, Harissa will hold out a hand for the second earring.
And she'll place it in your hand.
And again, slowly and ensuring she doesn't hurt you, swaps the pin and the earring. Now remember to salt water twice a day.
As you say, salt water twice a day, and you reach your hand up to it, you feel the slightest twinge as the holes heal closed around the stems of the earrings. And they start to glow faintly.
What?
This is new. This didn't happen with my brother.
Magic.
What? They don't really hurt as much. What
they don't
do you
hurt
mean
at
it
all.
It didn't happen with your brother.
You're still a little clammy, but they don't hurt at all.
They are glowing, my dear. Are they meant to do that?
I've never seen them glow. And she's like twisting her head back and forth to try to see the earrings, but she can't.
Sphinx gets a mirror from somewhere and like holds it up.
Sphinx like steals the little mirror from Whisker's like ritual pack and like runs it back over.
Oh, wow. That's, I've never seen them do that before. That's kind of bizarre. They're very pretty, though.
This glow is extremely faint, and it seems to, you know, kind of fade almost into a shimmer when you shift a little too quickly. It's not something that would be visible by someone in darkness, right? It's not like it's going to light up an area around you. This isn't a light effect. It's just a bit of a surreal kind of pulsing visibility, almost as if they're shining in light without there being a light.
Thank you so much, Harissa. That wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be.
You're just very brave, very strong. Weaker men have passed out. My mother was nursing him for about an hour. So you did very well.
Oh, man. Your mother sounds like she was very brave. Or is very brave. I haven't heard much about your family.
Harissa sort of looks at June contemplatively for a moment. I have not seen my family in some time, since I was much younger than you. They are still alive, as far as I'm aware, but, yes, it's been a long time. But I have fond memories. My father was very protective, reminds me of Isaac sometimes. And my mother, she taught me everything I know with my bow. She was, apparently it was one of the reasons my father was so attracted to her. Very fiery. And so fiery indeed, they had many children. Well, three. but two brothers and me. I was the youngest. But yes, it's been a while, a long while since I've seen them. You miss them, don't you? I miss them. I miss them a lot. I wonder where they are. Can we go see them, please? Sphinx, please. I'm having a moment.
And Mr. Sphinx is asking all the questions that, well, he's saying all the things that I want to ask about, so I'm going to assume. Do you think you'd ever get to see them again? Ever get to go back home?
She takes a deep breath while she actually contemplates this question for a bit. She's not really had to think of an answer. It's always been something she sort of put away. I think I would like to. I would like to see them again. Make sure they are well. I'm sure my brothers have many children of their own by now. But I fear that I have not fulfilled my part of my family duties, so I don't know how welcome I would be. But there are many things I'm learning about my family that I really didn't know before. I mean, she points at Sphinx. That is one of them. Hey! You like it, though? Nice surprise! Yes, very nice surprise. Yes.
He is very, very cute.
See, she thinks I'm cute! No, don't put ideas in his head. He's a big enough head as it is. I mean, he's too much like me.
And June will very... June will very, like, slowly put her hand out to Mr. Sphinx to see if she can give him little scritches under the chin. Little under-chin scritches.
Sphinx will look at you and look at your hand and just thrust his chin upon it whilst looking up at you. Yes, please! Ah, it is good. little to the left.
The goodest boy. The goodest boy.
Under the frill.
Get both hands in there.
Yeah. See, this is... You should give me next scritches. I don't know why. Yep. Okay, that's enough. That's Please. Enough. You get neck scritches when you've been good, was it?
Well, I bet they miss you, Harissa, and I bet they would be so happy to see you someday when you're ready to go there.
Perhaps one day, but I feel like family does not have to be who you are blood related to. You know? I feel like, well, like you and Isaac. Not technically family, but family. And it's been a long time since I felt like I've been surrounded by family. And I'm starting to feel that now.
With that, we flash back momentarily, Harissa, to an important moment in your life where you were surrounded by family. You are somewhere in the west of Astilla. Where has your family settled around the time that you decided to leave?
I feel like it's kind of, imagine... kind of like a Mediterranean type sort of like rocky, like on a kind of mountainside or kind of like cliff edge. I feel like it's sort of around there, and they're not in the town. They're sort of like on the outskirts of it. Yeah, I feel like that's right.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that this is just, it's a coastal little village on the far west of the western mountains, just west of Agravar. And you are surrounded by your family. As a matter of fact, there is a huge commotion happening in the sort of kitchen of this domicile. Your brothers and your father and your mother are having a very heated and exasperated conversation, and you're catching snippets. You're catching snippets. You hear your father say, "This changes everything." And you hear one of your brothers say, "I don't understand what this changes. It really shouldn't change anything." You hear the middle brother say, "I mean, he is most certainly dead. He is most certainly dead. Something is going to happen." You're catching little snippets of conversation, and really all that it imparts to you is that, God damn it, your family can't agree on anything.
I mean, what's new?
This commotion is happening in the kitchen. What do you do?
I think she finds herself rubbing the button on her sort of like neck braid and sneaks closer to the kitchen. What's going on?
Who are you trying to get? Whose attention are you trying to get?
I think anyone who can hear, but she's probably aiming it at her mother.
Okay. Go ahead and roll me just a flat charisma check.
Oh, that's my dump stat. How dare you? 13.
You are just completely ignored. She can't hear you.
What we have to figure out is what this means for the future of Agravar. What it means for the future of the whole region. It could throw everything into chaos.
Harris is going to just sort of like try and push her way through her brothers and like get in to like see what all the hubbub is about. What's going on? Push herself through.
You push yourself into the center of attention, and immediately everyone's attention is on you, and there's a little bit of frustration from most of the people.
What are you doing here? You're just getting in the way. We're trying to have a serious discussion about politics. We need to figure out what's going to happen to the fate of the family. You need to get out of the way.
Am I not a part of the family too? I deserve to know what's going on.
Your mother kind of pulls you aside and says,
"Safra, this is a complicated and delicate situation. We are concerned about what we're going to do, where we may have to go. It may be time to move again, and I know how you feel about that."
Well, maybe if someone told me why we had to keep moving, maybe I wouldn't get so sad and mad about it. What's happening, Mama?
Roll me a persuasion check.
Oh, baby Harissa.
There should be some. Baby Harissa has high charisma, I feel like.
100%. 100%. Double her charisma now.
13.
Okay. That's. You know what? That's good enough that I'm going to roll for it.
Yes.
No. Your mother looks at you and says,
"Safra, you are still a child. You are not yet ready for the burden of responsibility. This is not a discussion for you. Now go to your room. I will come and let you know what we decide."
She is going to stand there defiantly and not move.
Safra Harissa, when your mother gives you an order, you obey. You do not decide how to keep this family alive. I do.
You see everyone in the kitchen is hushed now.
Safra is... kind of has her hands crossed against, like, arms crossed against her chest, kind of trying to kind of keep eye contact with her mother in a kind of make me look And then she finally says, "Well, how am I supposed to do the same for my own family when I have one if you do not let me listen?"
"I have tried over and over to let you listen to the way decisions are made in this family. You have but one contribution, and it is to stay put. The last time we tried to stay put..."
And she shudders a little bit.
"The last time that we tried to stay put, you nearly got us killed. Now go to your room!"
Oh my god.
She tries not to, but like tears just swell into her eyes and roll down her cheeks, and she just runs to her room.
As you're running, you hear your mother pull herself together.
"All right, you three. We don't know much. All we know is that the Lord Hakota Agra is dead.
And we flash back to Harissa and June.
So, June, family is what you make it. It doesn't have to be blood, just as long as you care about each other.
As we get closer to rally, and specifically when we get, I don't know exactly what this proximity is, but once we hit a certain closeness to rally, Guard's physicality dramatically shifts, and it becomes noticeably more robotic again. All of that sort of like dazed kind of pacing that he was doing before, it's almost like a dial gets turned down the closer that we get, and at a certain point, Guard is very much just being a robot in terms of his physicality again.
I think that does not go unnoticed. But I think that it is at least a little bit overshadowed by the fact that you all return with 2 months worth of Elderwood resin. And the millstone is going, and the refinery is going, that purple smoke up from the center of town. And you all throw the doors open and are hailed by the rest of Rally, who cheer and applaud and thank whatever gods they may or may not pray to that the town gets to exist for another month.
Hi, it's Patrick. You might know me from the show you're listening to. I am, in fact, the DM. And from time to time, it is my responsibility to give you insight into the world of unbalanced encounters beyond the show of Rally.
No, but for real, we have some exciting stuff that's coming up. A lot of it's Patreon-oriented, so if you're not currently a patron, you can go to patreon.com/unbalancedencounters, sign up. Even $1 a month will get you the vast majority of what I'm going to be talking about here. If you're not already a patron, seriously consider it. If you are already a patron, we're going to be having our next episode of Rebalancing, the talkback show where you get to ask us questions about how we run this silly thing and, you know, how our broken brains work. It's
Going to be a lot of fun. The live stream events are always a lot of fun. We're still hammering out the exact day. We're hoping that it's going to be the weekend of August 27th or 28th. But if you join our Discord at discord.unbalancedencounters.com, you won't be able to miss it. We love having people from our community join in, ask us questions, sort of push the conversation where you want to go. If there's ever anything you wanted to tell us or hear us say, that's the best time to make it happen, because it's tight-knit, it's intimate, and hopefully we're actually going to be able to have our brilliant composer, Sayer Roberts, join us for this one. So if you are a patron, you're going to be able to join us. The link will be going up on our Patreon. Additionally, we actually have bonus content going up for this episode on our Patreon for anyone who's pledged at least $1 a month. A little later in the episode, you're going to see June write a letter to someone very important to her. And Sam actually wrote that letter, and Emily went and illustrated it. And that's going to be going up as a high resolution PDF on our Patreon for anyone who has subscribed at the dollar level or more. So again, if you're not already a patron, great time to jump in, get a hold of that letter, get a little bit of backstory, a little bit of bonus content, see us on Rebalancing live, get your questions in for us. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you will have our undying support and gratitude for the rest of your days. That's got to be worth something, right? I also wanted to announce that we actually now have a TikTok. It's crazy that we waited this long to create one, because that's how this entire project got started. But if you're on TikTok, you could search for Unbalanced Encounters, follow the official account. You're going to get to see clips of us playing the game, actual live sessions, as well as animatics that are being done by our newest crew member, Frank Romeo, who has done just these extravagantly detailed Hero Forge models and creates these really cool animatics for moments of the episodes. We're hoping to get more of those out, and Frank has actually just recently joined our crew. We want to welcome Frank. His work is astonishing. And while I'm at it, it's been a hot minute since I've thanked the entire cast and crew kind of explicitly. So going around the table, our main cast, thank you, Craig Pate, Sam Oliver, Cinderblock Sally, and Emily Graymore. And of course, our amazing composer, Sayer Roberts, who has done our theme song and so much more for this show. We literally couldn't do it without every single one of them, and we couldn't do it without you. So thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends about the show, leaving us reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and backing us on Patreon. No threats this time. No reiterations of the fact that it's literally your civic duty to give us a positive review on the podcast platform of your choice. Just love and vibes and appreciation. Thank you for listening. I'm going to let you get back to the rest of the episode. Do you like pirates? Leviathans? Our Three Corsairs Care for a Baby epic, The Odyssey? If you answered aye to any of these questions, then you need to play the game we played and loved, Rapscallion. Rapscallion is a strange pirate fantasy tabletop RPG, powered by the apocalypse and built for telling thrilling tales of swashbuckling fantasy on the great sea. Alongside your found family crew, you'll fight the law, witness the weird, and join the free. For our bonus arc, we had to parlay with Whistler, Rapscallion's artist, writer, and designer, to hornswoggle a preview. But you lucky dog, can get your hands on Rapscallion much sooner. Shove off to magpiegames.com/odyssey to join the Backer Kit campaign and get your copy.
Alms, alms for the poor, alms. Oh, hello there, kind individual. Might ye spare a crumb of validation for your favorite podcast?
That's right, it's award season, baby, and we need your help. The Crit Awards, the true People's Choice Awards for D&D shows, are back, and we need y'all to tell them how much you love us. We cannot nominate ourselves. Only our friends and listeners can. So we need you to go right now to bit.ly/crit2024 and tell them how much you love Unbalanced Encounters. If you haven't been able to support us in any other way, because, hey, time and money are tight, this is a huge way to help us spread the good word, and it only takes 5 minutes. So, bit.ly/crit2024. Pause this and go. Oh, wait. Okay, done? Oh, thank God. You are the best. And I love you in a totally non-parasocial way. And now I will let you get back to the rest of the episode. Okay, bye. We are going to be moving into a period of downtime.
During the downtime, you guys are going to be able to sort of call scenes and hit things that you're interested in doing. This is going to be about a month of downtime. But the first thing that you all learn in that, you know, those first couple hours is that the Minehead boys have left. They have, having finished the millstone, they took their quarry and presumably went to travel and go sell it. They left behind Big Paul and Willie, who are still in town. They were still in the process of sort of convalescing, and they were not necessary. They were not strictly speaking necessary to, you know, sort of make the delivery. And right away, you get the sense that Big Paul and Willie had expected to hear from Sherwood and the boys, some missive or a letter of some kind. But at this point, they're not overly concerned because, you know, travel can get delayed and you know, the variance of a few days, a few weeks is not uncommon. But the Minehead boys have taken off, leaving Big Paul and Willie behind. So we're going to go around the table and we're going to figure out what everybody gets up to in the month. You guys have 1 month of work to do refining this Elderwood, and you have been given a month before you are going to be sought out again by Porky to begin your defense of the forest.
I don't need to go first, but I know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. If that makes it easier.
Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and let you go first?
Okay. So, but I want to talk to Isaac specifically, and I want to tell Isaac that if something happens where I have to do my job, that his number one priority should be to protect June, because Guard believes quite firmly that June is the keystone that keeps Rally the way that it is, which makes Guard nervous that if something were to encourage him to do his job in a way that he might not be actively in control, that would his first thing would probably be to kill June, because that would be what would destroy Rally in his mind. So he's basically going to tell Isaac very specifically that, like, if I ever lose control in a way that, you know, sometimes I can, in a way that isn't in the woods, get June away from me. Or don't let me get to June. And then the scene that I want to have would be, I would like to take June to meet the Wolverine.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then the last thing is I want to get Harissa and Guard to start training the kids of Rally to run and hide from us, with the mindset being that if they learn to run and hide, sort of in the way that, like, you know, like a little pack, in case shit goes down in Rally, they'll be okay.
Like hide and seek.
Yeah, I basically want to play, because in my mind, that's what Guard does with the Wolverines, sort of treating it the same way.
That's very good. That's extremely good. Okay. We'll circle back to that.
Yeah, Harissa would be down for that.
So we'll go in clockwise here. June, what would you like to get accomplished during this downtime?
During the downtime, I would like to mess with the earrings, because she has no, like, Porky told her that, like, these are specific tools. So she wanted to, like, try to mess with those. And also go to her dad's grave.
Okay. Okay.
Yep, yep.
Harissa. Harissa, what do you want to get up to?
I would like to do a few things. I would like to I'd like to just kind of, like, have Harissa go around the town and just ask, like, especially Whiskers and maybe Oz, about whether they know anything about, like, the Tanin people, because Whiskers did allude to that some while we were out, and I think she'd want to explore that a little bit more. She's also probably going to spend some time talking to Sphinx and kind of getting more about what he knows about the process out of him. She's also going to tie her button eye onto Sphinx like a collar, sort of like there.
Okay. I think you just do that. I don't think there's a resolution there.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just want to make sure everyone knows at the table that that's what she's done with it.
Yeah.
But the one thing I'd like to maybe have as a scene, potentially, I would like Sphinx of his own volition, without Harissa knowing, in the nighttime, go and visit Isaac and have some one-on-one time, which I could do as a scene if Isaac would want to.
Okay. Interesting. All right, Isaac. Isaac, what do you got?
Isaac's is just going to be, it's not as much as I thought it was, just basically talking to everyone within Rally in discussion of they're more of a, kind of like what Guard's talking about, in the sense of, if we were ever to be attacked, like, your life matters more than, like, the mill or anything else, in the sense of, like, keep yourselves safe type deal. And then he has a task for Martin.
Nah.
Okay.
Oh, let's fucking go, Martin task. Yeah.
Go on.
Don't trust Martin. You think you can't trust me and you're trusting Martin?
He is. Isn't Martin from Rally, though? Or is he? Did he come with y'all?
No.
Martin came with us.
Martin is extremely gung-ho for the Empressar.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I thought he was just a goof from Rally.
Yeah, he's worse than me.
Who would he choose?
Oz.
Benny, maybe?
No, he needs Oz and Benny there.
I think I know what you're going for here. I think I know what you're going for here. And if you're looking for a runner, what I will say is hold off on that thought, because things may work out for you.
Okay. Because he has a note that he wrote in warden jargon, and so...
Yeah,
as he knows.
I think the reality here is that you don't have a good person to run this, and so I don't think it necessarily happens right away. But I see what you're trying to do, and I've got plans for it. Okay.
All right. Cool. Other than that,
cool. Ooh.
I don't think there's anything I can think of at this moment.
You're explicitly not bringing anyone other than Leah in on this plan yet, though, right?
Yeah. There's been no. Especially after what Guard just had told him.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. Cool.
He just learned.
Put me
he,
down
just
figured, if anything happens.
He just figured out that, oh, I was right. I was actually right. And Guard just told me I was right.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. Okay. Okay. We're going to go through a lot of this stuff pretty rapid fire. I am going to. Basically do all of the roles, all the things we're going to resolve as roles pretty consecutively. First off the list, Guard, I think you just tell Isaac about your kind of assumptions and beliefs with regard to protecting June. And I think that's just a conversation. I don't want to do that as a scene. I think that's just a conversation where you guys sort of, Isaac, you understand where Guard is coming from, regardless of whether or not you choose to act on that. That's eventually going to be your prerogative. But I think that Guard imparts that information well. Guard, do you enlist Harissa's help with training the kids?
Of course. She's better at hunting than I am.
Hunting the kids.
Hunting children.
Go ahead and give me a survival check with advantage, please.
Is this me or Harissa?
I'll let you guys pick whoever you want to roll. I mean, there's an obvious answer here mechanically, but who's taking
the roll, sorry?
The way that I'm imagining it is Guard does not think that this is a task that he can do well. He doesn't understand children that well, and Guard is like asking Harissa for help. So if Harissa's down to take the lead, I would love for her to take the lead. Guard is just like,
sure.
This is how packs survive. The children are basically as much a pack as like a bunch of cubs.
And I've got little Elmira as well to help me like...
Yes. Exactly, so I think this is going to be a survival check with advantage, if you would please, Harissa.
Ooh, with
as of Elmira.
Oh, glad I got that advantage. 16 in total.
Okay. On a 16, I think you accomplish basically two things. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna let you guys pick here. You get two of these four things. You can have them recognize Elmira as a sort of leader so that they'll follow her orders in a crisis. You can have them identify a safe zone or house that they can go to in times of danger. You could teach them how to use simple weapons. Or, and I think this one is maybe the most interesting, you can teach them about the terrain surrounding Rally so that they can sneak out, potentially infiltrate, be out in the woods unseen. You get to pick two of those four.
So, Harissa, what I would go for is the last one, know the terrain, and know a secret safe place. And I would have that place be in the woods.
Can we do that?
Sure. The secret safe place can be anywhere that you guys know about.
Okay, because you said like a safe house.
I'm not always going to promise that it'll be safe, but safe houses work like that, right? If it gets compromised, it gets compromised.
Okay.
Yeah. There is something else I wanted to add to this, and I completely forgot. Wait, sorry, you first, Em.
No, go on. You add the thing first, and then I'll decide what.
A part of what I wanted to do over this month was also spend time communicating to the creatures of the forest to look after the children if they do go into the woods.
Oh, I like that. That's cute.
My heart! Cool. Strings can't!
We're gonna roll that into a thing. So go ahead. Give me the... Are you going to choose those two? The know the terrain and safe house in the forest?
I would argue the safe house just because I wouldn't necessarily want them all in the same place if that place was compromised.
Mm.
So what do you think we should do?
I would have gone with the... I was tempted by the simple weapons because that's just fun. But
me too.
I think if we're giving them the terrain for outside and we're not going to be around, Elmira might be a good, like, just leader to kind of, you know, we need to go here, do that, da-da-da-da-da, you know.
Hell yeah. Let's do that. I agree 100%. Let's do that.
Okay. All right. Cool. So the two you're picking are know the terrain and recognize Elmira as a local platoon leader.
Yes.
All right.
Elmira.
So those...
We high five. Teachers!
Yeah!
Next roll is going to be June and the Earrings. Mm-hmm. June, the Earrings give you a cast of augury once per day. You are certainly welcome to use that. The way that this spell works is that you lay out some options, some decisions, some course of action that you would like to take and roll the Earrings. The Earrings will then tell you either wheel, positive outcome, woe, negative outcome, wheel and woe, mixed outcome, or neither.
Okay.
You're welcome to do that if you'd like.
Okay. So she's gonna meditate. She's gonna sit in her meditation spot, and she's going to ask, in her meditative state, can she trust her companions?
You toss the earrings. They clatter to the ground, rolling one over the other, facets tumbling, glinting, and they skitter to the ground. And in the left earring, a fortune wheel. Wheel. A good result. In the right earring, cloud begins to dissipate. And it pulses a little as if it's thinking. And it almost hesitates before it clears into a dagger. Wheel and woe.
Well, shit.
All right, Harissa, go ahead and roll me an investigation check as you start to ask people about the Tanin.
Give me that sweet 12.
Lots of 12s and 13s.
Doing good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a 12?
I'm getting very middle rolls okay. today. Yeah.
You can get good information in the course of your conversations by way of asking one question of Whiskers and one question of Sphinx. I'm not going to play them out. Just go ahead and ask me the questions.
Okay. The answer I have for Whiskers, or the question I have for Whiskers would mm-hmm. be just tell me, can you tell me everything you know about it?
Tell me everything you
just
know.
Just nice broad. Can you tell me everything, Whiskers?
No. This is why I'm not running this as a conversation. Oh. Please ask.
All right, fine.
Now, okay, what I'm giving you is real answers, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I just wanted a lot of information from you. I'm going to ask Whiskers.
Yeah.
What does he know about the Tanine's, like, destruction or like ending? Or
he has absolutely no idea. What he does tell you is that, to the best of his knowledge, they were a people that resided in the Eastern Wealds until they disappeared.
That's not helpful.
Sorry.
And then for Sphinx, I will ask if he knows of anything that could separate someone from their familiar.
Yes. Because your grandmother told it to you once.
Oh.
Familiars are lost when the thing that they protect is lost. You don't know what that means.
I love.
But those are the words.
I love the vagary and the riddles. Thanks.
Cool. Yep. Fantastic.
Great.
Okay. Cinder, we are going to go ahead and do guard. You and June arrive at the clearing where the Wolverine Cubs reside.
The babies.
Now, June, I'm going to need you to be very quiet because they are quite skittish.
June stops hopping up and down.
Here, take this. And I shall hold out, a little handful of berries that I picked from Gerda's garden and give them to June.
All right.
Just follow my lead. And we walk out into the clearing, and it is the clearing that I had that encounter with the townsfolk with some time ago.
Same one.
Brutal.
And I sit down, crisscross applesauce, and I just start thumping my hand on the ground, like boom, boom, making this like slow rhythmic thump, which is what I've been using to let the Wolverines know that I am around. And I encourage June to sit with me.
June, you notice that this is coincidentally in the exact same rhythm as the pulse of the forest floor that you only now are realizing you can kind of always feel.
Interesting. Okay.
And as this is happening, you sit on the ground. And I need you to roll me a dexterity saving throw.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Wolverine tackles.
All right. Yeah, I see what's about to happen. Yeah, she's sitting cross-legged, like, holding out the berries. That is a 17. But what I think is going to happen, I want to let it happen. Because that's adorable.
Okay, the Wolverine whips around from sort of around your right hip from behind a tree and just dives into your hands and immediately starts gobbling up these berries. I guard you here, the Wolverine say. Why'd you bring us? And just chomping away at these things. You then see two more kind of stalk their way from behind the trees, kind of...
Oh, little babies.
And one, a little bigger than the rest, standing a little taller and walking with just a hint of a limp, has a pheasant in its jaws. And it walks up and it drops it and says, "Guard, who's this?
Oh my god.
You've never brought us a friend before."
And June sees Guard hunch over and his whole body kind of like starts to get all very animalistic, and it basically starts going, but what the Wolverine hears is Guard says, "This is part of my pack."
"Oh! I've seen this one before."
"Shoot.
Does it live in the woods too?" The others have now kind of jump tackled June as well, kind of eating up the rest of these berries. But the slightly bigger one stalks forward again, just a hint of that limp, and sticks very close to Guard.
"Oh my god, y'all are just the such a cutest." And she's giving out scritches and like doing that like quick hand move, like on all fours, like my hands over here, and now my hands over here. And now
they are
here.
Just playing back and forth, these lithe bodies, just kind of a little longer than you might expect a carnivorous animal to be, just kind of swirling in their dives at your hands.
"Guard, they're amazing."
"They are growing. This is their pack leader. And I'm going to take my hand and sort of force the one with the limp in front of me so that there's nothing between it and June for a second, because I know I can sort of sense its hesitation.
And I'm just gonna, June's gonna hold out her, like, not go to, not doing the quick hand back and forth cat thing, but just stick her hand out to let the leader sniff her hand.
As you do that, it bites you.
"Oh, ow."
And it's just teeth into your hand. Do you pull back? What do you do?
Is it like he has my hand in his mouth?
Mm-hmm. It's not insanely painful. Feels a little bit like when you got your ears pierced.
Okay. She's not gonna yank back. She's gonna be like, "Ow, ow, ow. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Okay. You can drop it now. I need those fingers. I'd like to have them."
to the Wolverine. So June, again, we'll just hear this as snarling and growling. I'm going to say to the leader, "This one also lost its parents. Be gentle."
The jaws relax and it licks the trickle of blood that's coming from the palm of your hand.
"Aw. See, you're okay."
"How I... I'm sorry you lost your mom. That's hard. Did Guard bring you meat too?"
I don't hear any of this, right?
No.
she's just, "Oh my god, no, you're so sweet. Look at you. You look like you got a little boo-boo. Little boo-boo on your leg. That's okay. I've had boo-boos before. It heals."
I think you guys manage a bit of a non-verbal sort of repartee, right? Like there's maybe not an understanding, but a kind of mutual tolerance that happens here. And I'm happy to leave it there, but Guard, did you want to tell these Wolverines about your plan for the children?
Yes, I did want to. So as they are, after the initial like nervousness, what uncomfortableness has settled, and the hyperness has settled, so we're all just kind of like sitting around for a little bit, I will let them know. "This is June. She is one of the children of Rally. She is older than the other children of Rally. But there are many smaller children. They are not hunters. They are not harmful. There may come a time when they shall seek these woods for solace, where more hunters and more trouble will come to the forest and to the town. If the children come to these woods, I need you to treat them as if they are part of your pack. They will help you, and you will help them.
The Wolverines, without a single argument, give their consent.
And then Guard rolls over on his back and starts playing with them. Just for a second.
And that is where we're going to end that scene. So we move to June. Can you describe for me the graveyard of Rally? I will say that it is outside of the wall. You know, kind of encroaching on at least the edge of the forest. But aside from that, what does this look like?
I like to picture it as, you know, the Minehead boys, if they had, you know, leftover pieces of stones from making the millstones, or from the old broken ones, that those had been fashioned into headstones. And then families and loved ones had planted flowers or replanted flowers around those old millstone parts that are the headstones. I would think that her dad had like kind of a spot just a little bit outside of the rest of them. Mm-hmm. A little bit larger.
I think it's actually under a tree in particular. And I think that there are some just personal marks of people who couldn't find another way to express their grief carved into that tree. Maybe as simple as an X, just some indication of presence. And what's also interesting is that your father's grave always has flowers and so forth growing around it. People in the town see to that very consistently. There's a little tuft of them that you don't particularly recognize and that don't necessarily match the rest. They are the flowers from the boars of the boar god. And you see, you know, kind of closer inspection, that one of the stems has been snapped. And the flower is missing.
Well, Daddy, it looks like somebody might have needed a flower for something. Hope they gave it to somebody special. And, she'll get on her knees and kind of like just like tidy up a little bit and reorganize. And she pulls out of her pocket a little wrapped up note with some twine on it, and she'll look down at it, and Daddy, I've got some things I have to do. That are gonna be really challenging, and I'm hoping I'm ready for it. And I just want to say goodbye in case I'm not back for a while. And I hope wherever you are, it sounds like you might be somewhere in a blood tree, but I'm not going to think too hard on that. I hope you'll be around, and she'll take her little note and kind of bury it under the flowers near the gravestone a little bit and pat some dirt on it. And she keeps like dried herbs in her house, and she'll pull out a little satchel of it and put it over top of the little pile. If you get a chance, I hope you read this and appreciate that it's not written on a poster board somewhere. And we didn't always see eye to eye, but I love you and I miss you. And well, wish us luck. And she'll kiss the headstone and make her way back.
As you stand and turn toward Rally, you see a Goliath man, 7-8 feet tall, with a cane about as tall as you are, walk in your direction. Rosemary, for remembrance, a nice touch.
Hi, Big Paul. You're looking mighty big, mighty tall.
Yes, well, that doesn't tend to go away when one is injured. I suppose occasionally. I am lucky that it was not more grave.
Same. I'm glad that you're feeling better. And
I wish I could say the same.
I'm sorry?
He gestures with his cane to the headstone.
Oh.
He was a great man, by all accounts.
You knew my daddy?
Oh, no, Lord, no. He was before my time at Minehead, but Sherwood has stories and stories, and well, you know how Sherwood gets when he gets talking, and it's hard to miss.
He was pretty cool. He was a good dad, but sometimes I didn't always see that.
Oh, come now, June. Great leaders are rarely good parents.
She'll just chew on that for a second.
Wherever he is, I'm sure that he is immeasurably proud of you. But by that same token, I hope that you are immeasurably proud of you.
That's mighty kind of you, Big Paul.
I'll take it from someone who had a leader for a parent.
Well, there must be a real big heart living inside that giant body of yours. That giant hairless body. Are you still like greased? I don't understand like what this. I really need to know your skincare regimen.
Well, I'll be honest, a lot of it, and you can kind of see that he's a little less buffed to a high sheen than he has been in the past. A lot of it is Sherwood likes to put on a bit of a show, and you know the visual is impactful. You know, the gleaming sunlight off the forehead and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a living.
Thank you for your kind words.
Of course. I hope you'll forgive me that I, well, I'd been down here once before, and I noticed those flowers over there, and he sort of points to the little outcropping of flowers. They didn't seem to have been put here intentionally, and I was paying my respects and figured I might take one. I hope I haven't offended.
That was you. Well, now you gotta tell me where it went. Where'd it go?
He blushes, just like a deep red. Just like starts walking away. He just starts walking away.
I'm gonna find out now.
Just doesn't answer. Just starts walking away.
Bye, big paw.
And I think that is where we're going to end that scene. And if you haven't yet, please take inspiration for that visit to your father's grave. We're going to go ahead and do Mr. Spink's visits. Isaac. When is this happening?
So this is happening whilst Harissa is asleep. So Harissa doesn't know this is happening at all. So it's happening at night. The town's gone to sleep. Spink assumes everyone is asleep. He's going to sneak out, scuttle up the wall, down the wall. Sort of zigzag through rocks and grasses, poke his head up occasionally, make sure no one's looking, get back down, scurry about again, gets to the to where Isaac's lodgings are, scrambles up the wall, you see how lizards he slips a bit, goes, oh shit, and it kind of scrambles up to the wall, and then when he gets on the top of the windowsill, just imagine the Mission Impossible music playing. And then he's going to make sure Isaac is asleep, or at least around. Is he in his bed? Where is Isaac at this point?
Before you get in there, I would like you to please have Sphinx roll me a stealth check.
Doesn't have to be that high. Don't worry.
I don't have to do that.
We're going to learn.
It's probably not in your character sheet. You might need to look at the D&D Beyond thing for stat blocks.
I think you can also get the stat block if you click on the summon action. So you should have an action for summoning it, and it might be under that.
Oh, here we go. I got it. I found it. Drake Companion.
Nice. All
right. Well, it's a two. So he's going to just fall in the window.
No. He does everything that you said that he did.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Some other stuff happens too.
He's probably humming this as he goes. Dun, 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 dun.
Speaks World of Three probably because the entire time he's just bum, 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 bum.
singing his own theme song. 100%. I love it.
I kind of imagine Mr. Spinks stealthing the way that Ace Ventura sneaks around.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Where he's playing his own music.
100%.
Yep.
Dun, dun,
very crunk. Yeah, for Emperor's New Groove. Just like anytime anybody walks back, just like.
A 100%. 100%.
Amazing.
So he does all this shenanigans. Great. And is Isaac asleep at this moment in time? As he just sort of flops onto the window.
Probably. Trying to think why he would stay awake, but nah, there's no reason for him to.
So Sphinx is going to try and elegantly sort of sneak down from the window. But he's just going to fall onto Isaac from the window. Just poof. straight onto you're awake.
Grabs the lizard instantly by the neck.
Hello, Isaac.
I get a chance to just bring you.
Please don't. I come with nice things. I would like to live, please.
You are probably the weirdest thing that came out of all this.
I am too young to die.
Can he understand him?
Yeah, absolutely. Spink speaks common as well.
I don't know if you are too young. You know, anybody could die at any moment. And he just tightens his grip.
And then it, like, flames start kind of like sputtering out of his mouth as like the thing goes, and the frills are sort of like.
Instinctually, he just tosses them.
Yeah. He's gonna kind of get up onto his like hind legs and just sort of dust himself off. So rude! I come in try and talk to you. And
speak, just, demon lizard.
Demon. All right, listen. Listen, this did not go as well as Sphinx expected, but I come because, I mean, obviously I was under the poncho when you and Safra were having your heated conversation. I just wanted to say, I mean, she doesn't know I'm here. So please don't tell her, because she will probably do the same to me as you did, and I don't want that. But if so, she doesn't know I'm here, but I wanted to tell you that she may get cross sometimes, but she likes you a lot. She won't say, but everything she does is because she cares about you a lot. She didn't want you to die. She did what she thought was best. And he kind of just sort of like looks down at his feet and kind of fiddles with his claws, and he kind of looks back up at Isaac with his like best puppy dog eyes.
Isaac just starts laughing. He's like, oh man, you are one ugly toad.
This is so great.
No, what was your name again?
Spinks,
I'll tell you a little secret. I mean, Marissa kind of reminds... It's kind of hard to talk to somebody who reminds you so much of yourself. And let's just say if I was a type of soldier to follow the rules, a lot of Riley wouldn't be here right now. So I guess that's a little bit of a... I need to be able to take my own advice sometimes. So me and Harissa will have a conversation about it, Sphinx. You're a good friend.
So you don't hate her?
No, I don't hate her, no. I sometimes just get frustrated.
Yeah, think how I feel trying to talk to her. We are basically the same thing. Except I'm prettier, obviously. And kind of like... plays with his frills a little bit, like,
yes. Yep, that's what that is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but thank you for not killing me. I appreciate that a lot.
Yet
and yet. Mm-hmm.
Next time just use the door.
Okay. This is kind of awkward. Could you I can't reach the handle. Could you mm-hmm. Get the door.
Absolutely.
The door to Isaac's bedroom swings open. Guard steps in. I saw something sneaking into your room.
Oh, thank goodness, guard. It's right there. Attack it.
Oh. Guard puts the axe down.
Absolutely.
Good evening, Mr. Sphinx. And slowly closes the door.
No, guard, I'm in danger. What are you doing?
You're fine.
Sphinx is just like hyperventilating, like, and he just faints. He just falls onto them.
If you want a job done right, you gotta do it yourself. And he's gonna reach for his axe. No, I'm just kidding. Go on, Sphinx. I'll talk to Harissa in the morning.
He opens one eye to see if his fainting trick worked, and then goes, "Oh, okay, thank you," and then kind of scuttles out. Hopefully the door is still open. Scuttles out.
The door. And that is where we're going to end that scene. Isaac, 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 Isaac. Isaac, You have called a town meeting. Where does this take place?
I would assume in Dale's office. That's usually where most of the meetings, if not the
So this is just the leaders of the town, not distinctly everyone. That sounds good. So you have sort of the leaders of Rally in your office. They are all looking pretty pleased with themselves, that the town is kind of back on track for at least the moment. I think there's a little bit of a scuttle, a little bit of murmur. Have you told everyone kind of about the gods and so forth yet?
I would assume so.
Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of like people are sort of wrapping their heads around that. I think there's a far higher density of religious artifact, you know, sort of present at this meeting than there ever has been before. But you know, sort of generally people are in good spirits. What does Isaac say?
Now, so gods and in this chaos, we got the elder wood like we needed, but as before in our conversations, even more, it looks like we're gonna have to find some different type of way to keep Rally going.
I mean, what are you talking about, Isaac? You got this done in record time. You said it wasn't even the whole grove. You seriously gonna tell me that you're gonna let some little forest fable put you off of the biggest motherlode we found in some time?
It's not just the humanoid version of Carl that we're talking about. There's also, and I would assume that the rest of the party has told Isaac about that big shadow that they saw.
Yeah, at this point.
There's more intimidating things out there, very large and monstrous things. And if you assume that our gracious emissar will be the one to defend us against such things, from experience, I will have to say you'll be sorely disappointed. This is Rally. We have to take care of ourselves.
And what do you suppose we do, Isaac Axe Drummer?
Well, I say we do exactly that. Take matters into our own hands. Make a few deals. Make things a little bit interesting and remind all these gods that we're dealing with that we aren't their playthings.
Hear, hear. Leah puts her fist up in the air.
So, all in favor of making sure Rally is Rally's alone?
Really, y'all? Nothing? No one? Ah! And Leah throws her hand up. Reluctantly, Maurice follows suit.
Oz?
Benny and Oz stand a little bit contemplative. Eventually, Benny kind of quietly raises her hand. Oz says, We don't get like a plan or anything? Isaac, just a good feeling little quip.
Y'all know about Agravar and all their political issues right now?
Are Guard and Harissa here?
I was gonna ask that as well.
I was gonna ask, actually. I was like, am I here?
Isaac, it is your decision.
I would say if he starts talking about that, they would be on patrol or something like that. There would be no one like standstill, like affiliated with the Empsar in this meeting.
I assumed.
Especially after he just asked for everyone to call for rally alone.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
So before I was your humble leader of rally, I was something of a warden. And so I might be able to call on a few favors and distract the Empressor. But this conversation does not leave this room. There aren't many that we can trust outside of this room.
Insight check.
17. That's my like fourth 17 tonight.
That's actually not bad. On a 17, Maurice, Leah, with you, right? Not, they don't blink. Everyone's got a past. Oz is a little trepidatious, but is never been one to betray a confidence. I think that you still have to win them over, but they would never let this leak. Benny is stone.
Benny?
Benny is absolute stone. You have no idea what she's thinking.
Now, I've been told by one of our guard that I should not trust them, and then the other one is still questionable, but I've been told by a familiar face in sorts that I can trust them, but we will have to make some sort of negotiations with Agravar if we want this plan to work, and then it'll just buy us time to get to whatever gods are waiting for us in the Force.
We blame it on bandits.
Now, here's the thing with bandits. Our security's pretty good. Let's be honest.
Oz cuts in. No. Our security's great. And the Empressar themselves trusted our security. But our security is great here. On the road, things happen on the road.
Things do happen on the road. And if our security is here, then they can't defend what happens on the road. Thank you, Oz. That's a good point. All right. Let's make sure that Rally is able to hold its own.
If this works... You do realize that we are going to be beholden to no one and beneficial to, well, no one.
Maurice will be beneficial to ourselves and only ourselves. And from what it looks like, you need that.
You leave my damn tobacco out of this, boy. Handle myself. Ah, shit, you're right. We can handle ourselves. All right. I'm in. Cockamamie, good-for-nothing, crazy-ass plan.
Would you believe me if I said I had crazy ones before? With a lot less thinking, I'll tell you nothing.
Nothing would be less surprising, Axe Drummer. Not a single goddamn thing.
Then Leah kind of smacks him a little. Daddy, calm down. All right. You got us. Looks like you got Oz. Scrumpy? Scrumpy just...
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Benny.
Looks at you and says, Isaac,
I'm interested in your plan. It is a curious one, to be sure. Tell me this. Where is June?
And as she says that, we see Martin in the high watchtower at the top of the hill. He's standing post.
Two, three, four.
Looking out, surveying the plains to the edge of the Western Wealds. And Harissa and Guard, from your vantage on the ground, doing a round at the base of Rally, all of a sudden, you see the flare that Harissa gave Martin before leaving on the logging expedition go up from the guard tower, and a gong begin to sound. Martin scampers down from the guard tower, and at the top of the hill, you hear
emergency! Emergency! Everyone to their posts! This is not a drill! There is a contingent of armed men arriving from the east! Agravar!
Thank you so much for making it to the end of the episode, and a special thanks to our first two Rally defenders.
Kay Parker and Darlene Wallace!
We're shouting out the two most powerful people, the magnificent mavens, the champions, the glorious. We love you. You are amazing. Darlene, Kay, champions, we love you.
The best!
You're crazy.
You're absolutely the best.
Literally the best. So thank you so much for supporting our...
So fucking much. You guys are are making this possible for us to build, and we could not be more appreciative.
We love you.